the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. All eyes have been on Redwood City, California, as the Scott Peterson trial has been in its penalty phase, and the word is just out. In the last few moments, the jury has recommended that Scott Peterson be sentenced to death for the killing of his wife and unborn son. Now, folks, this is one of those cases that has gripped America's heart and conscience in all, you know, just the frame of reality. You look at all the homicides that take place in America. You look at all the circumstances. You look at all the pain. Why this case? Of course, it's in California. It's near a major media market. It's right there in the context of a media frenzy. But it also has some particular circumstances that have gripped America's conscience. Number one, it is not one murder but two. And in this case, the murder of Lacey Peterson and her unborn son, Connor, has helped America to understand the dignity of unborn human life. And so in the midst of this tragedy, America has learned something. That led, at least in part, to the signing of the Unborn Victims of Violence Act of 2003 that was signed into law by President George W. Bush. And much of the momentum to get that passed and to get it signed was, of course, concern for what this case, as just one case from California, represented, not only in terms of the law, but in terms of morality. The jury that deliberated the penalty phase spent over 11 hours considering whether Scott Peterson should be sentenced to life in prison without chance of parole or to death. Let's face it, the death penalty is one of the most controversial issues in America. It's one of the hardest decisions that any jury or juror could be called upon to make. The jury deliberated more in the penalty phase than it did when it attempted to reach a verdict. It came back unanimously with a verdict of guilty, not on one count of murder, but on two. And then in this penalty phase, the jury had to go and investigate its own heart, had to consider its own deepest convictions, had to look at the evidence of the case, and had to make a decision that most human beings never have to decide, never have to make, and that is whether or not to recommend life or death. And in this case, I think the jury made the right call. And it was clear that most of the persons in the crowd outside the courtroom there in Redwood City, California, thought that the jury made the right call. And I think we need to ask ourselves at the level of both the heart and the head why it was right. Why is there a sense that this is right? Why does this feel just? Why does it feel like justice has been applied in this case? Well, it is because we understand the gravity of murder. And you know, in a Christian worldview perspective, from a biblical perspective, we understand this in a way that the average person who doesn't understand the dignity of human life because we're made in the image of God will understand. According to the Bible, when you look at Genesis chapter 9, verse 6, God says, when a man sheds innocent human blood by his own hand, by man's hand shall his blood also be shed. That comes in the context of the covenant that God made with Noah. The death penalty is not there for vengeance. Now, I'll tell you, I think on the part of a lot of people in that crowd and a lot of people across America, vengeance may be the first thing on their minds. And you can understand why. That's why we have to have a system of justice that isn't vigilantism. This isn't some crowd that's going out to hang Scott Peterson. This was a long, drawn-out jury process. It was a criminal trial. This went through the due process of the rule of law. It is a testimony to the fact that common American citizens can make judicious choices based upon the evidence in a criminal trial, even a criminal trial of this kind of controversy, publicity, and attention. The death penalty is no easy matter. It's not easy to talk about. It's not easy to think about. It's not about revenge. It is about justice. And it's about the necessity of making a statement that human life has dignity because God has made us in His image. And when we murder another human being, we are taking a power upon ourselves that no human being is given. And that is the power to end a human life, an innocent human life, without cause. That's why homicide is homicide. That's why there are other legal definitions of killing. This isn't manslaughter. This wasn't an accidental death. This wasn't a death in the midst of war. This was premeditated homicide. And as much as I think many Americans will be very glad to have this off of the television screens and the headlines, because many Americans have grown very weary of hearing about this case. And yes, the press bears a lot of responsibility for sensationalizing everything. Quite frankly, what's gone on over the last few days trying to psychologize the jury is nothing less than irrational. But we should be thankful that in this case, a jury was not intimidated. A jury was not scared of the facts. A jury looked squarely into the evidence and came up with a verdict, not only of guilty, but to recommend the death penalty. This is a sober moment for the nation, and it is one we should not let pass without good Christian reflection. As you look across America, you can see that the gay rights movement is making inroads just about everywhere. And right here in Louisville, Kentucky, we have had one of the nation's most extreme gay rights ordinances for a number of years. Back before Louisville and Jefferson County were merged into one government, the city of Louisville had adopted what is known as the Fairness Ordinance. And that ordinance deals with everything from sexual identity to sexual presentation to sexual orientation and all the rest. It covers employment, public accommodation, housing, etc. When Louisville and Jefferson County merged into a metro government, there was a sunset clause put on all the ordinances and laws so that they had to be readopted. And just last week, on a 19-6 vote, the Metro Council here in Louisville readopted the Fairness Ordinance. I must say that the press was pushing this. There were many in the community who simply would not rest unless it passed. It was presented as a human rights issue. But in the bottom line, one of the most extreme gay rights ordinances in America was readopted here in the midst of middle America, and that ought to say something. Speaking of saying something, The Advocate is the leading news magazine for the homosexual movement. Right now, an issue is hitting the stands with Ellen DeGeneres on the cover. The story is about her. The cover story is a feature profile of Ellen DeGeneres, one of the most popular, one of the most well-known homosexual figures in America. There's an interesting twist to this story because the photographs for this cover article were taken by Alexandra Hedison, who was, at the time the photographs were taken, the partner of Ellen DeGeneres. But after the photographs were taken, and just as the magazine is hitting the bookstands, the couple's breaking up. In fact, it is broken up. Alexandra Hedison and Ellen DeGeneres are no longer a couple. Now, you may not have cared about that, but I tell you what this says very, very very powerfully, very, very clearly. It says that in the sexual confusion of the homosexual movement, an awful lot of the coupling doesn't last long in terms of the couples. And with all the conversation about same-sex marriage and all the rest, it's important to remember that one of the leading poster persons in America for lesbianism is now, and why do we know this, is now suffering the second or experiencing the second breakup of a partnership. Folks, we need to recognize that God was doing something very specific, very wonderful, and very intentional when he created marriage as the union of a man and a woman. When you mess that up, you're not messing up something slightly. You're not messing up something in a small way. You're messing up a huge picture, and that leads to further mess. So while there's so much conversation in America about same-sex marriage and where that's going, and even in the aftermath of the November 2nd elections, there's still a push. You're going to be seeing it from the national media and from homosexual rights organizations and from others and the political movements and et cetera to keep pushing the gay marriage agenda. Just remember this one incident. Just remember right now the embarrassment of The Advocate magazine as its cover story is hitting the newsstands. And the whole topic is already out of date. Folks, it's not just the United States. Right now in Great Britain, the leading movie is about abortion. And it's not just about abortion as some kind of documentary. It is a movie pushing abortion. The title of the movie is Vera Drake. It snared many of the top awards in the British Film Awards program. It won the Best Film and Best Director, also snared Best Actress Award for Imelda Staunton and Best Actor for Phil Davis. That's pretty much a clean sweep. But it is a movie that, in an incredibly powerful way, from what I understand, presents a case for abortion. Now, let me ask you, what is the chance that in Hollywood or in any other major Western entertainment capital, a movie just as powerful for the pro-life cause would ever see the light of day? Much less get nominated for the awards, much less sweep the awards program. This tells you a great deal about the worldview of Hollywood, of the movie-making industry, and of the artistic elite. This tells us where they are, and don't you doubt for a moment that in their medium, there is a message. Folks, we're going to talk today about the baby gap and what that means for America. We're not only divided between red and blue states, but between those who are having babies and those who are not. Is that a coincidence? I don't think so. We'll be right back. I'm Albert Mohler. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Today we had intended to talk about the baby gap, and that is a big story, and we're going to give an entire program to considering that. It has to do with the fact that if you take blue state and red state America, they're not only distinctive in terms of, say, moral values and other issues, they're distinctive in terms of birth rate. And yes, I don't think that's a coincidence. But we're going to talk about that another day, and I want to tell you why. It is because in the aftermath of the death penalty for Scott Peterson, as a way of kind of drawing a close to this argument, in a way that resolves it in terms of Christian thinking, not only just in terms of some emotional response, I think there are a lot of people who might want to talk about that this afternoon. And we're not going to turn this into one big death penalty therapy session. Instead, we're going to talk about why this would be right, or if some of you think it's wrong, why you would think it's wrong. You know, just imagine right now that you were one of these jurors. Did you make this decision for the death penalty, putting yourself in that position? Would you do that? Would you say that this double murder, with its extenuating circumstances, is rightly answered with the death penalty? Or do you think the death penalty doesn't apply in this case? And if you're going to make that case, tell me, are you just against the death penalty comprehensively? Or what are you looking for in terms of evidence and circumstances that would justify the death penalty? Give me a call, toll-free nationwide. The number's 877-893-8255, 877-893-8255. You know, I think a lot of folks are trying to imagine what it would be like to be faced with this kind of decision, to be locked in a room, and they were sequestered away and had no opportunity for much contact over the last several days as they've been in this penalty phase. And they're not just dealing with some kind of hypothetical issue. This is a life or death question that has to do with a murder conviction going right into the penalty phase. And I want to know, as some of you may be willing to say this, do you think that the death penalty had a lot to do with the fact that Lacey was pregnant? That she was carrying this baby, Connor, this little boy? Do you think that that really factored into the thinking of this jury? I'd love to know what you think. We really ought to have a conversation about this, because while all the chattering classes and the commentators are going to be talking about this legal angle or that legal angle, let's talk about the moral and biblical angle on this. Let's not talk so much as attorneys, but as citizens and as Christians trying to figure this out. Let's go to Daryl calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Daryl, go right ahead. Daryl, you there?
Yes.
All right. If you were on the jury, how would you have decided this case?
I would have decided this for the death penalty, but here's my question that I have had trouble with explaining to people, Dr. Mohler, is that as a Christian, I do oppose abortion because I consider that murder, but when you tell people that you support the death penalty, they get confused. And as you stated earlier, God tells Noah that in Genesis, you know, when you take a human's life, that their life is to be taken because it's murder, but as Christians, we're to live under the New Testament and not under the Old Testament law. And Jesus tells us in the New Testament that if you're, you know, when you're struck on the cheek, to turn the other cheek. So how is it that we can stand on that Old Testament part of the Bible?
Yeah.
That's what I have trouble explaining to people.
All right, Daryl, let me take a stab at it. Good question, and I think you're speaking for a lot of people who may be wondering the very same thing. Let me say, first of all, that when we talk about the Old Testament law, we're specifically talking about the ceremonial law. When we talk about what's been transcended in the New Covenant and the New Testament, we're talking specifically about the laws addressed to Israel. the specific criminal codes that had to do with all kinds of things that that we do not have on our law books today, and the liturgical law, the religious law that had to do with everything from what kind of fabric they could wear to where they could go and not go under certain circumstances and certain days and all the rest. But let's note that the covenant that God made with Noah was a universal covenant. It was not just with Israel, it was with all humanity. And, for instance, that specifically has not been withdrawn in terms of the new covenant in the New Testament. But let's also fast forward to the New Testament for a moment, Daryl, and just go to Romans chapter 13, where there the Apostle Paul, writing to the church at Rome, mentions very clearly that government is God's servant in wielding the sword. And by the way, that use of the sword is a reference to capital punishment, saying that when the government punishes the evildoer, it is doing that which pleases God. And so the death penalty is not only an Old Testament issue, it's a New Testament issue. And it has only been in very recent times that that any culture has moved towards having no death penalty whatsoever. Now, I think we can look back in history and we can see that the death penalty was applied wrongly in a lot of cases. And you can go back even to Victorian England, where in the early era there you'd have children who were sometimes executed for thievery and things like that. Well, you know, clearly that is not what we're talking about here. In the scripture, what is in that Noahic covenant is a very clear reference to intentional murder. And I think that's where we have to take our stand. And, you know, here again, the Bible doesn't contradict itself. So when the Bible says that human life is sacred and thou shalt not kill, we understand that is thou shalt not murder. And by the way, the Hebrew word that is used there is murder, because the same Bible also gives us rules for warfare. It doesn't say that the man or woman of God can't be involved in self-defense, cannot use lethal force. It just says cannot do so in a way that will bring on guilt. And so, Daryl, you raise a good question, and that's why it is not inconsistent to be against abortion and for the death penalty. In a real comprehensive sense and consistently, that undergirds the dignity of human life. We believe in the death penalty for murder because in taking a life, you forfeit your own life as a way of demonstrating just how atrocious murder really is. Thanks for your call, Daryl. Let's go to Charles calling from Cincinnati, Ohio, listening on WTBN Radio. Charles, go right ahead.
I believe that the punishment that was issued out was justifiable because I believe that innocent blood shed, you have to answer for. And I also believe that I feel that that punishment should also go to the people that do abortions in this country, because you're shedding innocent blood. And if I remember right, that when in the beginning of Genesis, where the blood cried out to God for revenge.
Right. The blood of Abel you're mentioning there from the early chapters of Genesis. Thanks for your call, Charles. You know, I think one of the most important things, and Charles here was affirming the fact that the Bible clearly speaks of the necessity of justice when innocent blood is shed. But I think something else that we need to celebrate right now in a sober-minded and clear-minded way, given the Scott Peterson verdict and sentence, at least what's being recommended by the jury to the judge, is the fact that this went through a very fair, very thorough due process system in the courts. This is not a group of vigilantes going out and saying we're taking justice into our own hands. These jurors did not appoint themselves. They were summoned. They were commissioned. They were charged with this responsibility. And I think that is a very clear distinction here. We're not talking about the people of Redwood City, California, just taking justice in their own hands without due process of law, without the rule of law, without evidence and without hearings and without Scott Peterson having the opportunity to make a defense. We're talking about the justice system working in such a way that these jurors, who otherwise were just men and women like the rest of us in that community, were able to reach a verdict. And even though it took them some time, they were able to look at the evidence and they were able to make a verdict that clearly does have the support both of the evidence and of popular opinion. Folks, I want to know what you think. Could you have voted for the death penalty? If so, why? If not, why not? Give me a call, 877-893-TALK, 877-893-8255. The issue is the death penalty. The case is Scott Peterson. And now the opportunity to speak is yours. This is the Albert Mueller Program, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back, America. Just in case you have not heard the news, the jury in Redwood City, California has brought a recommendation to the judge in the case of Scott Peterson, and that recommendation is that he be given the death penalty for the murders of Lacey and Connor Peterson. As you can imagine, all the media networks and the newspapers and all the rest are immediately turning to this story because it has been the focus of so much attention nationwide. And a part of that is just due to the sensationalism of the trial, but I think the greater part of this is due to the fact that this case has spoken emotionally to the American people. And it has become a moral teacher for us, I think, even in the case of Connor Peterson, of the dignity of unborn human life. This is one murder. No, it's two. And I think that clarification that it is two murders has really, really reached the American heart. And, of course, also the case just in terms of the sheer ugliness, awfulness of the circumstances of it. The question that I'm posing to you this afternoon is this. Had you been on this jury, would you, could you have recommended the death penalty? That's the question. The phone number 877-893-8255. It looks like there's some folks who are going to be ready to say they would not have reached this recommendation. First, let's go to Phil calling from Columbus, Ohio. Phil, welcome to the program.
Thanks a lot. I'm happy to be here.
Well, go right ahead, Phil. What's your answer to this?
I have a real problem with the death penalty from a government standpoint, but as Christians, it seems like I can't make an argument that it would be immoral or wrong to exercise the death penalty, but it seems like God regularly releases what he's entitled to. He lets us get off with all kinds of stuff. How can we say, yes, this is what he deserves, and we're the people who are going to exact that revenge almost?
Yeah, you know, Phil, I'm taking you at your word here. You're making a serious argument. Let me ask you to talk with me here for a minute. Are there any cases in which you would think the death penalty would be appropriate?
No.
No, okay. So no. Like with the Nazi war criminals and any number of others, you would not. Charles Manson, who, by the way, was not given the death penalty because of the time at which that trial was held, when the death penalty had been ruled unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm.
So you would say there are basically no circumstances, there's no crime that you believe should be answered with the death penalty.
I would say in our American form of government right now,
okay.
We don't have the resources, or we can't do it to use the death penalty. Imprison them forever, lock them up, put them away forever. No problem with that. But it's like, by the numbers, it's more efficient to keep them in prison, lock them up forever, and then they're not dead. I mean, it's killing for people that kill. It doesn't.
Yeah, well, an interesting argument, Phil. I appreciate you listening, and I appreciate your call. And I think there are others who may share your view on this. Let's go to Melissa calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Melissa, go right ahead.
Thanks for taking my call, Dr. Mohler. I'd have to say, if I were on the jury, I do believe in the death penalty, but I would be hesitant to put out a death sentence for someone because I would fear that some evidence would come to light later on that maybe perhaps he was innocent. And if that man had been executed, then the innocent man's blood would be on my hands. And, that would lead me to be a little bit more hesitant to convict someone to death. And I just want to know, from a biblical standpoint, what would be my punishment for sentencing an innocent man to death?
Yeah, well, Melissa, I don't think you find a direct reference to that in Scripture, but obviously you're underlining the sheer gravity of this question. And by the way, in the Old Testament, it required an eyewitness in order for the death penalty to be applied. And by the way, that eyewitness did not mean that the person had to see the murder take place, but the eyewitness had to see the evidence to be absolutely certain that it had taken place. Melissa, you raise an issue that I thought someone might raise, and you can jump right from your question to this. In the case of Scott Peterson, there was no murder weapon found. There was no smoking gun. There were no fingerprints on any murder weapon. And so what you had in the Scott Peterson case was evidence that was largely circumstantial. Now, it was devastatingly circumstantial, but it was still largely circumstantial. And some people, especially legal experts, felt that this jury might have a difficult time recommending the death penalty simply because it lacked the proverbial smoking gun. It took them over 11 hours, but they came back with that verdict. I come back to our question, what would you say? We've heard from Phil and Melissa, who said they would not have ruled for the death penalty in this case. I want to know what you would say. Give us a call, 877-893-8255. That's area code 877, toll-free nationwide, 893-8255. Does this answer from this jury bring moral satisfaction, or does it raise more questions than it answers? That's the question for you to address. Give us a call, 877-893-8255. This is Albert Mohler, and I'll be right back. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Just out of California is the news that the jury in the Scott Peterson murder trial has brought back a recommendation of the death penalty. And, of course, that is spreading across the news media right now. An awful lot of conversation about it. And that's so right here on the Albert Mohler Program, because we need to look at this from a Christian perspective, a biblical perspective, not merely from a legal perspective or from just the kind of man on the street opinion that is not tied to any particular worldview. We are a committed people. We are concerned for how we as Christians should think about this, and I want to know what you think. Let's go first to Al calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Al, welcome to the program.
Hi, Dr. Mohler. Thanks for taking my call. My question was in regard to criminals that are convicted in this way. You know, what happens if, well, sorry, I'm stumbling around. David Berkowitz, for example, was saved after he was incarcerated after the Son of Sam murders. And, you know, supposedly he's doing a great work for God in prison now. You know, I guess the question I had was, had he been executed before he had a chance to be saved, you know, then his soul would be lost.
You know, I honestly don't know about the David Berkowitz case, so I can't speak to it. I believe he was the Son of Sam killer, and so at least I recognize the name. I don't know about those circumstances, and I'd have to look into it before I could speak about it. But let's just take the principle you raise, the circumstance, and say, is there a good case to be made against the death penalty in that, from a Christian perspective, if a person's dead, that person cannot respond to the gospel? Well, my response to that is, of course, we want all persons not only to hear the gospel, but to have the opportunity to respond to it. And we believe that God's grace can be extended even to a capital murderer, as well as to any other sinner. And so, you know, David Berkowitz or Charles Manson or anyone else, should they come by faith to the knowledge of the Lord Jesus Christ and express their faith in him, believe in him, then they can be forgiven their sins and be given the gift of life everlasting. And so that's the amazing reality of the gospel. And just in case that offends you, just realize that each of us has sinned against the infinite holiness of God. Thus, each of us has sinned infinitely in God's sight. And so even as God takes sin very seriously, we understand that that when we're looking at a murderer, we're just saying that that's another sinner. But we also understand that God has given us the imperative for justice. And so, Al, my response to that is that I believe that we should nonetheless apply the death penalty in a just and biblical way, knowing that this is what God has told us to do. I believe that in the Bible, that is to undergird and to affirm the dignity of human life. And as we do so, we should also take responsibility to do our very best to get the gospel to all persons, including those who are behind the walls of prison. And some, yes, who are even now awaiting execution. And so you raise a good question, I think, from a Christian perspective. Should we just keep someone alive in the hopes that at some point they will come to the gospel? Well, when it comes to someone on death row or who has committed a crime worthy of death, I don't know that you can make that argument indefinitely. And by the way, when you talk about the death penalty system in America, you're not talking about anything that moves fast. You're talking about a very long and drawn-out process, which is a part of the problem, as a matter of fact, with the whole purpose of the death penalty being to be a lesson for the community about the dignity of human life. Spreading that out in terms of cause and effect is a way of confusing that as well. Good call, Al. I appreciate that. Let's go very quickly to Connie calling from Fayetteville, Arkansas. Connie, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I was telling your producer that I'm just on my way home from a meeting with some prosecutors, because my brother was murdered a year ago. and it is a death penalty case. There are aggravating circumstances that allow it to be, in the state of Arkansas, a death penalty case. I have no problem with that. I think this man that committed this crime, this heinous crime, should die for what he's done. I don't in any way wish the man that his soul would be in hell. I hope that he, you know, finds a way, someone finds a way to talk to him, and that he will give his life to Christ. But that doesn't change what he's done.
Connie, bless your heart for calling. Hang with me here if you can. I mean, you call with a credibility that, frankly, no one else outside your situation could bring. And God bless you and your family for what you've undergone in the aftermath of this murder. I can only imagine what that must be like. But let me ask you, Connie, there are a lot of people who would say that for a family member to be for the death penalty in this case is nothing but revenge. Is that fair, Connie? I don't hear revenge in your voice, but, you know, there's some people who are going to say that. What would be your response to them?
Well, I have no connection to this person. I did not know him. I don't know anything about him other than he was an acquaintance of my brother. But just the sheer fact that he planned to do this, had an opportunity to not do it, and decided to take a life. And, you know, that for me, he just needs to pay for his crime. We all deal with the consequences of our sin. Even though we can be forgiven if we ask, we still deal with the consequences. And the consequences of murder is that you no longer have the ability to say, I'm in control of my own life.
Connie, bless your heart. Thank you so much for the call. And in fact, you've made so many good points just in a couple of minutes of your own testimony here. Number one, thank you for answering my question, because I do not hear revenge on your heart or in your voice. And let me point out that the reason this is not revenge is that in the United States, we do not say to a family of a murder victim, you can go take the life of the murderer. Instead, it has to go through the trial system. It has to go through the courts. It has to make its way through the rule of law. Then it isn't revenge, it isn't vengeance, it isn't retribution, it's justice. And the problem is, if there is no justice in that way, then indeed human life is treated as a trivial thing, an unimportant thing, something is not of great and infinite value, and murder becomes just one other crime, you know, just a more serious form of crime in which you have kind of shoplifting on one end and petty theft, and then murder and even mass murder on the other side. Connie, God bless you. And by the way, the whole circumstance of your call is really important here today. Connie said she had been meeting with prosecutors. It's important, I think, that the prosecution and a trial understand the circumstances. And I think it's important also that the community pay this very close attention. That certainly was the case in California. I hope it's also the case in Fayetteville, Arkansas, in the murder trial and in the penalty phase for this man accused of murdering Connie's brother. This is a very, very important issue. It was wonderful to have her first-person testimony. God bless you, Connie. God bless your family. Folks, we're not talking about abstract issues here. This is literally life and death. That was the question before the jury in the Scott Peterson trial. Who knows? One day you may sit in a similar position on a similar jury facing a similarly daunting question. You better think ahead about your convictions on this issue. And that's what we're talking about today. I'll be back with the final thoughts in just a moment. The issue is the death penalty. The case is Scott Peterson. And I'll be right back. This is the Albert Mohler Program. Well, you can count on the talk shows tonight and perhaps for the next several hours talking about the Lacey Peterson case, the trial of Scott Peterson, and his conviction in the murders of Lacey and Connor Peterson, and now the death penalty recommendation from the jury. The jurors have now been released, and you can imagine the sense of release that must be on their hearts as they have literally been captive to this trial for over a year. You know, folks, as you think about this whole case, it begins with tragedy, and it ends with tragedy. But the tragedy at the end is a tragedy that is made necessary by justice, and that's the difference. You know, on the other side of a murder, of a double homicide like this, there is the absolute necessity that society enforce justice, and that is for more than one reason. Number one, because if we do not, we treat human life as a trifle. But secondly, because there is a lesson to be learned here. It is very, very important that the citizens of this nation know that this justice system is serious about prosecuting those who do wrong, and especially prosecuting and punishing murderers. Without this, just imagine where we would be. In a kind of lenient, laissez-faire society that doesn't take murder seriously, you can count on murder being the order of the day. Well, today is an important day in terms of our nation's history. It's the one-year anniversary of the arrest of Saddam Hussein, and that's another reminder to us that the rule of law is important, because one of the big issues out before the Iraqi people is how they will conduct the trial of Saddam Hussein and do so in a way that is honest, a way that has integrity, and a way that is truly just. We need to be reminded on the one-year anniversary of Saddam Hussein's arrest that this is still a big issue, and that we should be praying for the Iraqi people as they establish their government and as they also establish the rule of law. And that trial, don't you know it, is going to be a big test, a fundamental test of the integrity and the determination and the honor of the Iraqi people. Today's important in our nation's life in another way as well. Today, the Electoral College meets. On November the 2nd, those who were elected most immediately were the electors, who now go and represent their states, 535 of them in the Electoral College. The expectation is, of course, that George Bush will be elected and will receive those votes, 289 votes, I believe, that are to go to the president, and that will make a big statement. Folks, what we're looking at here is the fact that the Electoral College is a part of our democratic process made necessary by our Constitution. Let's be thankful that we have a rule of law and a system of government that works. It proved itself on November the 2nd. It'll prove itself today. It'll prove itself on January the 20th, 2005, when George W. Bush is inaugurated. We'll be back tomorrow to talk about the baby gap and what that means for America. Blue states, red states, whatever your state, get ready to talk about it. I'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows, Dr. Moeller's daily crosswalk commentary, and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Moeller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.